Well, we're doing a update on Joshua. We haven't done it in a long time as a podcast, and so we decided we should do that. Well, one of the things that we can do is talk about the process of rehabilitation, the good news, the bad news, and update on where your body's at. It's been a long time since we've done that on audio. We've done some things on your blog, so why don't we start there? Before we do that, just a quick summary of all the injuries you had from your motorcycle crash. If somebody's just now tuning in this podcast, haven't listened to others, you were involved in a motorcycle crash 2 years ago. Why don't you get a quick rundown of what those injuries were, and then we'll go from there.
I had crushed in the left side of my face, and I had a ruptured aorta. I had two shoulder injuries, rotator cuff injuries. I had my right thumb was broken. My left wrist was broken. My left leg had a blood clot. I had 7 broken ribs. I had my stomach was third degree burns. And I think, two burst fractures in my vertebrae, in my back. In my right hip, essentially exploded. And I think that it was a traumatic brain injury and then some minor spinal cord damage. I think that's everything.
Okay. So you had all that. You're alive.
Yep.
Obviously. And
only a miracle.
Only a miracle. And in the process, you've had several surgeries. What has worked in the surgeries? So you've had all kinds of different surgeries. What would you say, which surgery would you say has actually worked and there isn't any problems anymore?
My facial reconstruction, it took almost 2 full years for me to get my feeling back in my upper left side of my face, and I don't have any issues with that anymore. And I would say out of all the surgeries, that's the one that I don't really feel like there's any lasting damage. I mean, I've got hardware in me, but there's not pain anymore in my face, and I can feel everything, and so it just feels like that one's the one that actually did what they said it was supposed to do.
What else? What about your thumb?
Yeah, my thumb, it's crooked and cockeyed, but it's functional. I can bend it now, and they had to remove a bone. It broke, and then they put pins in it, and apparently it was either for me pulling the pin, trying to pull the pins while I was not really right-minded, but they think maybe that's when I re-broke or caused it to not be able to heal the first time, and so they ended up going in. It had finally fused, but there was a piece of bone that was blocking the movement of the thumb, and I had that removed, and now I have almost full range. Still a little bit of limitation, but I mean, I can grasp things and pick up a coin and all that, so that's major progress.
Okay, and what about your left wrist?
That one, the surgery was on the inside, the femur bone is the bone that broke, and the ulna was dislocated, and then the styloid bone, which is on top of the ulna, was broken, and they've fused things together there, put in a bunch of hardware, and it took a little less than 2 years to get full functionality out of my left hand, and I can open and close it just as if I never had an accident. So that one was a resounding success. That was probably the one that took the longest to heal.
Okay. So then issues with your ribs, you have ongoing issues with your ribs. What's the ongoing issues with your ribs?
It's like that right now, but where my vertebrae burst, where the ribs connect to that, it dislocates, and it usually takes 3 to 4 days after it's been put back in place. About 3 or 4 days later, it pops out, and it just feels like somebody almost like sticking a hot stake in your lung. It's just ongoing, and that may be something that stays with me. My therapist thinks I just eventually I'll hopefully get enough muscle in my back that it'll hold it in better, hold in both ribs better. But two of them dislocate all the time. And there's, I can't do anything. It, she has to push and twist, and usually there's a loud pop. Hurts like, get out. But then it, the pain immediately goes away. And so it, if I get that done once a week, it comes back regardless. It's just nice to have it back in because there's less pain.
Okay, and then obviously aorta's recovered also, out of that, or you wouldn't be alive now.
Yeah, that was probably the most important one. They put the stent in the aorta. The only reason I lived through that is the rupture was below the arch. And the aorta is the largest artery that comes out of your heart, and it normally when it ruptures, it's on the arch. And for me, it ruptured below the arch near the spine, so there was a bunch of tissue and muscle and stuff that was around it, almost like a compress. And so that's the only reason I didn't bleed out and die from it. And they put a stent in there. And the only issues that we've had recently that they just now fixed with the pill was that my blood pressure was starting to get to where it was getting a 147, 143, 145 in there. And it's not allowed to go over 150 or I could have a possible re-rupture. And so my cardiologist put me on a new medication, and now my blood pressure has come down. I'm in usually around 120 on the systolic. And then my heart rate, for whatever reason, a couple months ago, my heart rate came back to resting at about 105, 110, somewhere in there. This new medication's dropped it down to resting is about 60.
Okay.
So that's been taken care of.
All right. So what's the ongoing issues with your back?
Think it's nerves in my back. There, we were put on hold. Now I just need to contact the doctor to tell him the hold's off. Because of the hip issues on the left side, the back got on hold. But their goal was to go in and do test injections on 6 different nerves in my back, and then as long as they got results from that, then they were going to go in and it's called radiofrequency ablation, where they cauterize, they kind of zap with a laser the end of the nerve, and it kills the nerve, and then it takes anywhere from a year
mm-hmm.
Is typically get about a year before it grows back, and then it can grow back and have no pain. It can go back and have the same pain, have different pain, have no pain, and or less pain. It's all, everybody's body is different, and so, and there's 6 different nerves they're wanting to do it to, so you could have some relief and some none and all relief. I mean, it's really up in the air on how that works, but now that the game plan has changed with my hip, the back, we can go back to start trying to fix the back, because the mass, I don't want to say the mass, the most painful area on me is my back, and it keeps jumping between my back, and then it'll go to my hip, my left hip, and then it'll go back to my back, and then my left or right hip, and then to my back. So right now it's my back.
Okay, and then you said your left hip postponed, so why don't you describe what's going on there, because your injury was originally your right hip, and you've had some surgeries there, but we'll talk about the pain in that. But your left hip, what was the reason why you...
Well,
weren't getting the treatments on your back, and now you can?
The problem pretty much started at birth. I have hip dysplasia is what the doctor said. And I guess if you think of your hip, most people have your socket that your hip goes into is a kind of like a shape of a C or a cup. And then your ball joint goes into that. Well, people with hip dysplasia, instead of having a C, it's a very, almost like a, oh, if you took a C and spread the tips apart, and you got a very wide C, so there's not as much side to it, and so the ball doesn't really get locked into place. It has a lot of wiggle room, and that's just a birth defect. When I had my accident, my right side was the one that was injured, and because of all there's 3 surgeries on the right side and a tremendous amount of pain, and I basically babied my right side by leaning a lot of my weight onto my left unintentionally, but just because of the pain, and it made the left side wear out instead of, I guess I would have had to have a replacement hip on both hips sometime probably in my, I think he said 80s or 60s, 70s, 80s, somewhere in there, when I'm old, I would have had to have surgery because of the hip dysplasia, but because of the accident, the right side was destroyed, and so that had to be done. But then all the compensation and putting more weight on the left side just wore out the cartilage and stretched out the tendons and ligaments, and so basically went through rapid degeneration because of putting so much weight on the left side, and doesn't have a lot left holding it all tightened together. And the goal was to try to do a steroid shot, and if that would take away enough pain, then I would just deal with it till I can't deal with pain anymore, and then we'd do it. But right now we're doing a weight loss to attempt to get the joints a lot less pressure on them and be able to handle the pain enough to hopefully postpone the surgery for at least a couple years.
Okay, so then we got to talk about the ongoing pain with the right hip. But before we do that, I don't know how long people will listen. And so how do you deal with this? You just described everything. You're not in a wheelchair. You're not using a walker. You use a cane. So you have some mobility, but we'll talk a little bit more about your pain level and stuff. But how in the world, everything you described doesn't sound like fun.
It's not. I'm in pain all the time. It's just...
So how does a person deal with that? I mean, so you must be on all kinds of pain meds. You must be on heavy-duty narcotics. You must be a zombie and just zapped out the whole day to deal with it all.
I'm on all of what you just said, but it I don't know if I'm blessed, lucky, or just a weirdo, but that, like, narcotics don't give me any highs. They don't make me feel like I'm in la la land, unless I'm on the max dose right now, but I take one less pill than the max dose per allowed by my doctor.
So max dose of morphine, Demerol, and everything together.
No, I have buprenorphine. I was on morphine in the past, Dilaudid in the past, and at max dose of both of those, I start having brain confusion. I don't get high, but I get confused and I have cognitive issues where I can't process things very well, and it's just because the drugs are so potent. The same thing happens with buprenorphine. If I'm on the max dose, if I take one less pill than the max dose where I'm at, I still have the ability to process things cognitively for the most part. I still get, if I really, really trying to think about something, that's usually when I start having trouble. But other than that, I'm able to process pretty good, and I don't get any of the side effects of being sleepy or nauseous, or the only thing I get is minimal pain relief, but enough to take just the edge off to be able to function.
So you're just about in the highest dose of it. So that means aren't you just pretty much pain free and able to do whatever you want to do?
Nope. Being on the level I'm at keeps me from most of the time not going over a 7 in pain. I'm almost always in a 6 and sometimes in 5, and I've gotten down to 4 and 3 before, but very rare, short-lived. But majority of the time I'm in 6, pushing into a 7, and sometimes I get to a 7. But since being on buprenorphine, I haven't gone over a 7 aside from surgery in the hospital. And honestly, I would not have gone to 8 like I did unless, if the staff had listened to me when I asked them to put me back in the bed.
So, again, you're not getting much relief, so you're dealing with 7 pain, level 6, 7 pain most of the time. If you do anything at all, you could be level 4, but if you do anything at all, you jump up, right?
Yep.
So how do you deal with this? How are you dealing with it? If taking a bunch of narcotics doesn't give you relief and help you out, then what do you do?
A lot of prayer, a lot of times where I don't do good and I kind of give up and don't want to do anything but lay in the bed. And if I lay down, my pain drops down. If I don't lay down, then any time being vertical is where the pain comes. If I lay flat on my back, that's the least amount of pain I have, and I'm able to be in that level four pain. Typically, if I just lay down on my back, I can get myself to four to five pain normally. If I upright in any way, or even shift to my sides, that's when the pain goes up. And so sometimes I just push through it because I want to do things, and then times I become a crying mess in my bed, yelling at God and being angry. So I go between moments of sanity, moments of insanity, moments of clarity, inclarity, woe is me, thank the Lord. I kind of go all over the place.
So in the midst of this pain, the medication only can do so much. I believe part of it is your body's probably gotten used to the medication again, as you've had this in the past where it starts to get used to it.
That happens a lot.
And so it gets used to it, and then it doesn't
help me with any pain relief.
Because that's why you've gotten off a lot of different times of medication. This stops working pretty much, and you get off of it, saying it's no use even being on it. And you've gotten cold turkey a couple of different times like that because you say there's no use being on it. And I'm wondering if that's what's happening with the buprenorphine now. So that's a whole nother topic about how what can happen by being on painkillers for long term. Unlike others who normally have chronic injuries, major accidents, chronic injuries, and chronic just means it's going to be for the rest of your life pretty much of some sort. You haven't just thrown your hands up and just say, I'm just going to be pumped up with pills and be a zombie. Is it because they won't work? Because you never really had that experience? Are you scared of that? Or what stops you? Because you could get the doctors to give you a whole lot more. You could work the system to be able to get more. So what stops you in all that? Because I want to cover that, because there's people in your same situation, and they're addicted. They're literally addicted and run out of their medication every single month. You know people that are like that run out of their medication every month. I know somebody that we know did something with me the other day, and I can tell you in the mornings, I caught what's going on with them as they're on medication, and they're talking with slurred speech and kind of la-la land when they're first taking their meds. So I know they're on very high-level meds because of how they were talking and stuff. What stops you being that person?
I can't stand that I am addicted physically. My body physically is addicted. Anytime I've been on not anytime, because when I've cold turkey, it hasn't happened, but I can tell I'm physically addicted, because if I forget to take a pill in a day, I start to get more depressed, and I can feel like a change. But physically, I'm addicted. Emotionally, I'm not addicted, and that's the part I don't want to be emotionally addicted. Don't want any way, shape, or form to be emotionally addicted, and so I'm not willing to try to pound more pills than what I should in a day and that kind of thing. I think even if I had more pain relief, I wouldn't want to do that, just because I hate the fact of something controlling me.
So even if you could get a heavy-duty drug and it would get you down to level 2 and 3, which to live considering level 2 and 3 pain, you haven't lived that way for 2 years, you wouldn't do it?
No, because the cost of that is brain function. The higher dose you go, the more it affects your brain. And I can't stand not being able to think.
But if you didn't think, then you can't. If you can't think, you can't think about anything. So you can just be a vegetable sitting on a chair and be relieved of pain and
why am
and
I
happy
here?
Have somewhat like a normal person, quote.
Well, why even be alive at that point?
So that's really that you just don't see you going down that road.
That's not living. That's being alive just to be alive. It's you're a pooping and eating machine, and that's all you are. I want to have some use. You'd be able to do some things.
Even if that means tremendous pain at times.
Well, yeah, I mean, essentially the other route is being a vegetable, and that's not life.
So, you know, going back to the other injuries and problems, so your right hip, you live with ongoing pain with it. There's nothing more they can do with the right hip. Is that right?
Yep. They've made it now. It can't pop out anymore, which is the big thing. And I've got a little less range of motion, but I mean, overall, it doesn't stop me from being able to lean over, or, you know, put on clothes or anything like that. It's just there's some pain that's involved, and it's actually the part of me that hurts the worst when I drive more than 30 minutes is my right hip starts really hurting.
Okay, and then you got arthritis throughout your body now.
Yeah, everywhere that was broken, that's healed up.
And so another issue that you have is cold weather.
Yeah.
Which, why don't you share how you found that out, how you realized it, and I questioned what was going on with you because it made no sense to me, and then explain why it made no sense to me.
Well, we left the house about 5-something in the morning, early morning, to go to a lake a few hours away, and we showed up to the lake, and I think it was 40 degrees, I think. And
but we're close by, parked, so you just literally go just down some stairs. And
down some stairs, which that's hard for me, but it's still doable. But I got down and threw in my fishing line and said, I can't do this, and said, you know, I don't want us to leave because we just spent all this time to get here. And so I just stayed in the van, and every now and again turned on the van to warm it up just a little bit. But my hands felt like somebody had dipped them into liquid nitrogen and then took a hammer and smashed them, and like they were being shattered. It felt like they were being shattered every second, and it was excruciatingly painful. So I said, well, you know, lesson learned. hadn't something I hadn't done and tried, so found out I can't do that.
So why was I so shocked about that?
I love fishing.
You love fishing. Where'd you grow up?
Alaska. Well, and to this day, I'm in shorts right now. I wear shorts in the middle of winter. It's just me. But it was far too painful.
And so that's going to be probably following you the rest of your life, because there's not a whole lot they can do about arthritis. So in the midst of this, as we kind of wrapped up with all the stories of what you're going through right now, and what is there to hope?
So I don't put a whole lot of hope into what the doctors say, this procedure, this thing we do, or the surgery, whatever, is going to give you this relief or help out in this area. I hope that it's true, but I have stopped putting my emotion and being all excited into it, because they've been wrong so many times, and so it's not worth putting a bunch of my emotion into something and then just to be let down. So when they say that it might help me with pain, I go, well, that's good to hear. I hope that that's true, and if it's true, then I'll celebrate when it's true. But I'm not willing to celebrate early, so to speak, because of the fact that I've been let down. But with my issue with my bladder, that's one that I could have less pain when that's taken care of. Losing weight, I know for a fact, is going to put less pressure, so I'm assuming it's going to be less pain. Eventually, they will have to replace the left hip. When they do that, I'm hoping that there's less pain. I am putting a fair bit of hope in doing the radiofrequency ablation in my back, because my back is the thing that bothers me the most of the time. So I want it to work. I'm just cautious about letting myself get all in.
Losing the weight thing, that'll be a whole nother show that we talk about, another podcast about weight loss, eating disorder, how it affects recovery, the fact that the doctors never, the first time you ever heard in 2 years is the last time you went, right?
Mm-hmm.
Did a doctor ever say anything about it might help weight? How much weight to help people to know why weight loss may be helpful?
I was 300 pounds at the time of the accident.
And you're at what now?
As of this morning, 251.
And you should be at?
Around 190.
So obviously there's quite a bit of weight that could be lost, and the hope in that, and then why that's hard, and can it be said, and again, it's another podcast, can it be said this accident waked you up to a whole nother area of your life that you really had never addressed?
To many areas.
Many areas. And so we'll cover some of those areas that it opened up to. as we finish up, you know, with everything you described, there's people that have that, and yet they still do stuff. You still do stuff, but, you know, it's funny that Social Security, you're trying to get SSI, and they denied you once during the second time, but when they denied you, they said that they saw no reason why you could not work full time. Did it actually say work full time?
Yep.
So they said there was no reason you can't work full time. So are you faking it, Josh? Because I got tons of work I need help with. It should be a two-man job, and I'm doing all by myself, and you live with me. You don't help me. We want to go to trips, and we can't go on trips because you can't last for trips. It turns around that even if we do prayer, we drive over and do prayer for an hour, and you're sitting down, you're in misery, and if you had a car, you would drive home before the prayer was over, right?
Sometimes.
And so out of it, something isn't matching in the midst of it. At the end of the day, is this all real? And do you wish it wasn't real?
I'd love to be finding out I'm in a dream or I'm in a coma and I'm going to wake up soon. I'm playing.
But you face the reality. This may be your life forever.
Yep.
So wrapping up, we've got to get something positive here. This sounds all hopeless, discouraging. You say, well, because it is hopeless and discouraging. But what's the positive message? What can you say? If somebody else is listening, they're saying, he just described my story, and it's a hopeless situation. What is there? What is there to live for? What is the hope? How in the end of the day do you not just say, forget it?
I got to look at the blessings I've gotten out of the accident, too. I've gotten a lot closer with my family, areas where there was no communication, there's communication. I've grown in maturity. I get to see my family longer than, I mean, I should have been dead 2 years ago. That should have been the end of it. And so every day I wake up.
So you've got at least 2 years that you've got that you've had because of the accident with family.
Yeah, and that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So there's a ton of positive that's come out of it. It's just mixed with a lot of pain. I mean, that's the biggest thing is, yes, there's I'm not able to do certain things and all that, but the biggest problem of all for me is the pain.
So you could accept that you're never going to hike again, maybe, never going to ride a motorcycle again, you're never going to take long trips again because there'd just be physically tiring or physical limitation. The hard part is dealing with that pain.
Yep.
And that's why most people become addicted to painkillers. That's why most people just say, I'm not going to deal with it. And so they go and take the drugs as the way to be able to cope with the pain. But then you already can see and know that a lot of those people then just become zombies.
Well, you talk to somebody that's like that, and I mean, it's no different than talking to somebody that's got a screw loose. The narcotics at a certain level will make you crazy or make you, you know, not be able to have a regular conversation without looking like you're high on something.
And do you think it affects your relationship with God when you're high on the drugs, when you got all the drugs?
Yeah, because you're not there. You're not mentally capable of being there.
As another positive message is, in spite of all the pain and everything else, you've built a relationship with God that maybe, can I go as far as to say, maybe if all your relief, your pain, everything is gone, you could have gone sideways. You could go sideways in your relationship. Is that, you understand what I'm saying? I don't know if I said that the right way.
Especially with me, one of my biggest struggles is my whole life I've lived by emotions, and emotions are not always true. And so it's, I think, one of the best things that ever happened to me was this accident, because of what it's done with my relationship with God and my family. But I mean, I'm getting better at making smarter choices and stuff that I would never have been able to learn. I've been able to learn because of the accident.
Stuff you could never listen to.
Yeah, I would flat out either scream and yell louder than someone else, or I would just pretend like I'm listening and it would go in one ear and out the other. But now I can hear correction. I couldn't hear correction whatsoever before. No, and that's the other part, is no one ever tried to correct me or, you know, give me any feedback.
It's too dangerous, right?
Yep, I was just volatile, like a explosive.
And so could you say at the end of this recording, could you go far as to say for somebody who's going through what you're going through and that feels helpless and hopeless, can you say that for you, if the rest of your life you have to deal with the pain, is the gain in other areas of your life is worth it? And I know that's a hard one.
I was going to say that. I can say yes to that with some reservation.
And why is there reservation?
I always want to hold on to hope that there's going to be less pain.
Yeah.
So
I
don't want to say that if I don't ever get pain relief, then I'll be fine with it. You know, I don't want to say that because then that's like giving up hope. And hope's one of the things that drives
you. So you're going to fight to find some kind of relief from the pain in a legitimate way. But if not, it still is worth what you've experienced in the last 2 years. You just wouldn't wish it on anybody, and you sure hope that the next 2 years is different.
Yeah, but I'm always going to hope there's less pain. And obviously there's no way to know. You just keep living your life, and, you know, one day I might get to heaven and I'll have had relief, or I might not have, but I'll never have stopped hoping.
Right. All right. Well, thank you, Josh, for being open and sharing with it is. Hopefully somebody listening, you're going through the same kind of stuff and you just really want to throw your hands up. We could have made this a real positive day and give we could make this really positive and give a lot of Christianese sayings and say it's all worth it. And God is giving you so much strength that you don't even feel the pain because he's so close to you and you're so intimate with him that all you feel is his presence. We could say all that, but I think that for 90% of the people, that is not the story, never going to be the story. It's really the fact that in the midst of the trials, in the midst of the tribulations, in the midst of the pain, in the midst of the frustration, in the midst of all that's going on, is that you still can be able to see something positive, because for many, their eyes are blinded to see anything positive. So if you're open to the fact that there is something positive that can come out of all this, then you'll be able to see the positive. And I would say that you've been open to that. You allowed yourself to find the positive in the midst of all this.
Yep.
And so hopefully for someone else listening, that it'll maybe encourage them to start looking at the positive instead of all the negative. And if you know Christ as your Lord and Savior, he can give you the strength to be able to go through it. So trust in him. Call out to him. He's the only answer. He's the only answer for Josh. Everything he's doing, but it's only because of Christ that he can do it. So again, Josh, thank you for giving us your story, the guts of it all.
Yep. And the last thing I'll leave you with is I've found that when I try to pray for someone else and take my eyes off of my own suffering, I get a joy, and there is some actual relief from what I go through when I try to put somebody else first and pray for them instead of focus on my own problems.
Amen.
You've been listening to There Is Hope, and any advice or counsel given was provided for informational purposes only.